Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I am joined today by Eli Thornton of Draft Twitter. Eli, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. How's it going?
It's going well. So first off, I'd love to know a little bit more about you. So how long have you been kind of doing this? Do you have an NFL team? What's popping right now?
Yeah, for sure. So I've been scouting players. This would be pretty much my third year. Back in 2017, I did a little bit on quarterbacks, but nothing too comprehensive. I'm a big Steelers fan, so you know, just kind of focusing on draft and some Steelers content.
Okay, as a Steelers fan, I have a question for you because I don't think it's been talked about. There are so many moving parts this offseason with quarterbacks and things like that. One guy I'm really fascinated with who will not be moving but will be coming back next year is Ben. What do you kind of foresee as the 2020 outlook for him? What are you kind of, as someone who follows the team closer, are you hearing that he's making progress in his recovery? Do you think he'll come back the same guy, or are you worried at all? I'm a bit interested on what you think about that.
Yeah, so for sure. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, he's back throwing, which is good. I'm hopeful that he's, you know, he can be back to his old self. I wouldn't bet the farm on it because I think he's shown some signs of decline just even at his level of play before he got hurt, like in the past year or two. I don't expect them to address the quarterback situation this offseason. I think they're going to roll with Mason Rudolph as the primary backup and probably address it next year in the draft. But I'm hopeful he can still maintain a high enough level of play. And given their defense, and they've got some really nice young receivers, I think they're in a solid position even if he's not playing at his best. Because, you know, they were one game out of the playoffs with some of the worst quarterback play in the NFL this year.
Yeah, that's very true. I think the Steelers are an uber interesting team to track. They don't have a ton of cap space, so I don't think they're going to make a big splash in free agency personally. But I definitely think they might, you know, draft another wide receiver or two and maybe load up that offense a little bit more, especially with how good that defense was last year, as you point out, leading them almost all the way to the playoffs. But the reason I had you on today and just kind of a brief overview for our listeners of what we're doing today, we're going to talk quickly about the Russell Okung trade that was just made earlier today, kind of who we thought won the trade, basically. And then I had Eli on because he is very good at what he does as far as scouting quarterbacks goes. And this is a really interesting kind of quarterback class. I'm always fascinated by the quarterback class in drafts just because it's the most important position in football. And so much can change if you draft the right guy. So I wanted to really dig into all of these kind of top quarterback prospects because it does seem like there are a fair amount of them that sound like they're about to go in the first round, so I wanted to learn a little bit more about them because outside of maybe Justin Herbert and Jordan Love just a tiny bit because I live here in Utah and I follow the Pac-12 and the Mountain West, I don't know a ton about the quarterback situations and who's coming into the league. And then we'll also talk briefly about running backs as well, just kind of hitting on Eli's top five because I think the running back class hasn't been covered a ton and I want to see kind of what's upcoming for that. Also, general podcasting note, I know this is coming incredibly, incredibly early and we're still like a month and, man, we're further than a month away from the draft. We are like a month and 3 weeks away from the draft. So I realize that's happening. My work schedule gets pretty hectic in March and April, so a lot of this draft stuff I'm recording now so that you guys can have it. My plan is to front load the episodes so there are like 12 episodes in March, and then we will have a draft preview and a draft recap in April, and that's about it. But that's just a general programming note. Eli, I'm sorry I'm talking so much. Let's get started with the Russell Okung for Trey Turner trade. I know neither of us are huge offensive line guys, but Russell Okung's a guy who's if you follow the NFL closely, you're fairly familiar with him. What do you think about this trade?
Yeah, so I really don't understand it from the Panthers' point of view. They gave up Trey Turner, who's 26 years old, has made 5 straight Pro Bowls, and, you know, if they're thinking about, you know, entering a rebuild, he seems like the type of guy you'd want to build around. And they have Taylor Moten, who's a solid option at tackle. They just invested draft capital into Greg Little last year in the second round. They traded up for him. So from their point of view, I don't completely get it, because I think Trey Turner is probably a better player at his position than Russell Okung is, and he's younger. From the Chargers' point of view, I think this may kind of affect their draft strategy, because they don't have a starting left tackle. Maybe they look at a guy like Tristan Wirfs or Andrew Thomas come to draft. But they got a really good player in a solid player in Trey Turner.
Yeah, it also doesn't make sense, in my opinion, for the Panthers to do this just because of Russell Okung's injury history. It seems like the guy is always on an injury report. He doesn't play a ton of games. I'm kind of with you. I really didn't understand why they made this trade. I mean, of course, they're trying to build something with kind of Matt Rhule. I've heard some interesting speculation. What do you think the plan is here this offseason for the Carolina Panthers? Like, I've heard some people think they're really going to tear it down this offseason. I'm personally of the mindset I don't think they'll move Cam Newton, but I think outside of Cam Newton, they have a lot of kind of veteran players that they're going to try to move on from this offseason. What do you think?
Yeah, so I'm not entirely sure. I think a lot of it's dependent on Cam Newton being healthy, which is quite a big if, because he hasn't been able to stay healthy recently. It's really, they brought in Matt Rhule, they brought in Joe Brady, who's a very good offensive mind. So if they roll with Cam, they've definitely got the coaching staff to succeed. You know, moving guys like Trey Turner would suggest that they're entering a rebuild, but trading him for a 32-year-old injury-prone left tackle doesn't make any sense. So it's not as if they're moving him for draft picks. Right. So it kind of seems like they're in a little bit of a they're a little bit in between, like a rebuild and trying to win now, which I think can be a little tricky, because I think what NFL teams do too often is they kind of they move on. Generally speaking, they move, like, teams can move on from assets a year too late rather than a year too early, and I think they make the mistake of that. Just being honest, we don't know what Cam Newton's level of play is going to be when he gets back. He's been injured a lot. You know, maybe it's time to move on and look at a guy like Justin Herbert or someone like that in the first round. But, you know, it remains to be seen. I think a lot of it's dependent on kind of how they feel about Cam Newton.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the Carolina Panthers progress with their kind of off-season plans. I'll be interested to see what they do in free agency and the draft. All right, let's get into some draft stuff. I want to start with, and this was something I was just thinking about earlier today, so thank you for being flexible with this, but there is so much hype about this wide receiver class and all these receiving weapons that are coming out. I haven't heard a ton about running backs, and especially with the way the NFL is trending, where we have seen time and time again it is not prudent to give running backs big money and sign them through free agency. The way to do it is to draft them and use them on their first contract and really wear them out like that. So I just kind of wonder, how does the running back class look this year?
Yeah, so I think it's a very, very solid class. You may not have, you know, your Saquon Barkley's or things like that, but I think you've got some top-end talent in guys like DeAndre Swift and D.K. Dobbins. I think it's significantly better than last year's class. And, you know, some guys I like right now, my top five is, I've got DeAndre Swift at one, J.K. Dobbins out of Ohio State at two. A guy I'm a little bit higher on is Cam Akers out of Florida State. I think he really suffered from a bad situation there, but he's a really talented player. He's my third-rated running back. And then I've just closed out the top five. I've got Clyde Edwards-Helaire from LSU and Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about Jonathan Taylor. What really pops out to you? Because I know, I don't follow college football super closely, but I know he was in the running for Heisman a few years ago. What really pops out when you watch Jonathan Taylor?
Yeah, so I'm a little bit lower on Taylor. I'm actually a Wisconsin fan, so I've seen a decent amount of him. I mean, I don't think anyone can deny he's a super talented runner. He's just not he's not the most well-rounded guy compared to some other prospects in this class. But from a physical perspective, you know, he's got great size, tested really well. I think he ran a 4.4 flat or 4.39. Great production while at Wisconsin. He's a guy who can you draft him to be your bell cow because he's shown he can take a strong workload. And, you know, I probably wouldn't – I mean, I have this philosophy with all running backs. I don't think you should give a running back a second contract, but him in particular, because he's coming off a really quite a large workload in college. But my main issues with him are ball security. He averaged a fumble every 54 touches in college, which is just not going to fly. That's once every – that's every other game you're fumbling. And he's not super well-rounded, mainly as a receiver. And as we're seeing in today's NFL, the ability to, you know, be split out wide as a receiver or just receive out of the backfield is huge for running backs. And you see that at the top end of running back talent in the NFL with guys like Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley. So I think he's a little bit lackluster in that area compared to, you know, a Clyde Edwards-Helaire or other players.
Who's the best receiving running back out of this group?
I'd say Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of LSU. He's not going to blow you away physically, but in terms of, you know, testing numbers, but I think he's a really solid receiver, really reliable.
Okay, that's good to hear. I'd like to ask a little bit about DeAndre Swift. I watched a little bit of Georgia this year. It seemed like he was really the only part of, and we'll get to Georgia later in the quarterbacks. It seems like at points he was one of the only reasons that Georgia was able to move the ball last year. What do you see in him? Who's your pro comp for him?
Yeah, for sure. So it's tough to say a pro comp because I don't really want to force one, but I think he's a guy who's a really well-rounded player. And, you know, he can be used similarly to a guy like Kamara or McCaffrey. I wouldn't say he's a carbon copy of those guys, but he has that kind of well-roundedness in his game. He's just, you know, really good vision, good athlete. You know, he's got some nasty change of direction. His dead leg is pretty special. And he's, you know, a very, very good receiver as well. So I think he's going to be kind of one of those guys who's a really solid three-down back right away. He's a really good player.
How many of these guys are going to be of your top five are going to be available day two? Because I see a lot of mock drafts, and I don't see a lot of running backs going in my first round.
Yeah, so that's really tough because I don't think there's a lot of teams that really need running backs, particularly at the top. I think maybe you have teams like Kansas City. Even them, that's kind of a luxury pick because, you know, they need some guys on defense, some linebackers and things like that. I think it's really going to depend on, you know, whether or not some teams are willing to take some luxury picks or not. Because I think the two guys you think will probably or have a decent shot to go day one if running backs go on in the first round would be DeAndre Swift and J.K. Dobbins. So I think it's entirely possible that I think Cam Akers and Clyde Edwards-Helaire will for sure be day two selections. Jonathan Taylor maybe sneaks into day one because of how well he tested, but I'd say it's a solid bet that at least three of them are available on day two.
Oh, all right. Oh, well, that's good to hear. As a fan, I'm a Broncos fan, so I think they could stand to add a running back maybe in the second or third round. So that's good to hear that there might be one available. Finally, I have a biased question. I'm from Salt Lake City. What do you think about Zach Moss?
Yeah, so he's my running back, RB6. He's a really solid player. He's not, you know, the most dynamic athlete, but he's a really tough runner. Like, his contact balance is really fun to watch. I think he reminds me a little bit of Kareem Hunt as a runner. And I think he's a guy you take on day two. You can, you know, really use off on his rookie contract. He can be a really solid running back for your team.
All right. Okay, let's get to the main event here. Quarterbacks. And I want to just start, before we get too into who these guys actually are, Can you walk me a bit through your process? How do you evaluate these guys?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't, generally speaking, I don't really have access to a ton of all 22, which is certainly helpful when evaluating quarterbacks, but typically I'll mainly watch cut-ups of these guys. And I think the main things you want to look for when evaluating quarterback, so I'd say accuracy and decision-making are two very important things. But I think something that I value maybe more so than others is kind of the ability to actively win you a game and kind of be a playmaker. And I think you're starting to see that with the young quarterbacks in this league who are really having success, whether that's Patrick Mahomes, you know, his arm talent is certainly there. That helps create plays. Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott, kind of these guys who are, can create off script, can create off platform, can make plays with their legs, and kind of have these physical traits that help them actively win you games. And I've started to value that more, particularly with how the NFL offenses are being designed.
Obviously, those are all really important traits. Everyone always talks about intangibles, and I don't want this question to come off as chippy or taking a shot or anything. What are some of the intangibles that you look at? I know there are a lot of people who do this on Twitter who are really good at like putting out, here's what's happening on tape. How do you figure out about these intangibles that are so important with quarterbacks, like leadership, things like that? What are you reading? What are you looking at to kind of get an idea of what's going on there?
Yeah, so absolutely. I think that's a huge thing if you're an NFL team looking for a quarterback, a large part of that has to be what kind of guy is he, you know, what's his work ethic like, what kind of leader can he be? And I think that's part of the reason I was higher on a guy like Josh Allen than a lot of people on draft Twitter were, because, you know, he was definitely raw coming out, but he was mature. He is a very good leader, and I think you've seen that in Buffalo. He just acts like a pro, and he's very young as a quarterback. And same thing with Drew Lock in Denver. You know, you have these guys like Von Miller raving about his work ethic and his leadership ability. I think without having like full access, like NFL scouts do, of knowing people inside organizations and be able to talk to coaches, it's a little bit hard to get a full picture of what these guys are like off the field and even on the field in terms of leadership. I think, you know, reading about kind of how people who have interacted with them or played with them, what they think of, how they talk about him. So like a guy like Drew Lock, you have people who have played with him really say like, wow, this guy's he's a great leader. He's, you know, he really puts in work on the whiteboard. And I think when you have people going out of their way to really talk about the character of a guy or, you know, his work ethic, I think that's super helpful. But it's definitely hard to fully get a picture of a guy without, you know, sitting down and talking to him.
Yeah. I was honestly just always kind of curious about that. But yeah, there is so much media out there these days too, where you can look at what a guy says on Twitter or articles about him in local newspapers and things like that. It does seem like those might be kind of resources to chase. Now, getting to these quarterbacks, one more actually that I have at the bottom here. I'm always curious how quarterback classes stack up. I think to me, I don't have instant recall on drafts, but the one draft in like the past 3 years that sticks out would be 2018 at this point, when you have Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Josh Rosen, all these guys that go in the first round. I would say in the last 5 years, that's kind of the gold. Well, maybe it's not. Maybe it's the year that Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes come out. How does this draft class of quarterbacks stack up to like the last three or four?
Yeah, so I'd say it's definitely better than last year's. Last year, I really liked Kyler Murray. I liked Drew Lock. You know, Dwayne Haskins was a solid player as well. But I think this class is definitely better than that class. I think it's pretty comparable with 2018. I'd say the top-end talent in this class is better than it was in 2018. I prefer Joe Burrow to anyone in that class. I'd probably take Tua over anyone in that class. But Josh Allen's pretty close. I was quite high on Josh Allen, admittedly, which may have been a mistake. But I think he's been a pretty solid player in the pros.
You'll get no arguments here. We're a Josh Allen podcast. I love Josh Allen.
Yeah, he's a dude. 2017, I'd say overall this is definitely a better class. I wasn't on, you know, Twitter or anything back then, but I remember in the media they were saying about how it was kind of a weaker class. I did like Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes quite a bit. I think after that there was a bit of a drop off, and you're seeing that in the pros. I mean, Mitch Trubisky hasn't been very good, and outside of Deshaun and Mahomes, it's been pretty dry. I'd say this is pretty comparable to 2018, but I'd probably take this class over it. I think it's a pretty solid class.
All right. Well, that's good to hear. So let's just jump right into it. First off, I kind of want your top five, and this is, as we said at the beginning, this is a really NFL-heavy podcast, not super draft related. I don't know how many of our listeners watch a ton of college football. If you could give me a pro comparison for each of these guys, that would be super helpful as well.
Yeah, for sure. So my top-ranked quarterback is Joe Burrow out of LSU. He reminds me playstyle-wise of Tony Romo a bit in terms of his pocket movement, you know, his accuracy, things like that. And typically when I do pro comps, it's purely based on playstyle. It's not a career projection. I think people can kind of get caught up in sometimes. But Joe Burrow, he's my top-rated quarterback that I've ever scouted. I'm a huge fan of his. I think he's got some really elite traits in terms of accuracy. Just statistically, he was the most accurate passer in college football history this year. I think he had, like, in terms of – this isn't even completion percentage. This is just in terms of accurate throws. He was, like, 80% on balls over 20 yards, which is unheard of. He's got some great pocket – he's really good in terms of his movement in the pocket. And he's a guy who I think you can just tell without talking to him, he's the type of guy you want in your organization. He's like, he just seems like a total leader. He's the kind of guy who I feel like you don't want to bet against. He just, and also I think what's huge with him is he's worked his tail off over the past year because he's improved a ton. And yeah, it's definitely helped to have a guy like Joe Brady and who was, helped implement a really good offensive system. But man, he's from where he started at LSU to where he is now, there's been drastic improvement, and that's large part because he's been getting in work in the offseason. He's been working his tail off. So if I was the Bengals, I'd have the card already written. I'd run up to the podium. I mean, he's a slam dunk pick in my eyes. My second-rate quarterback is Tua Tagovailoa out of Alabama. I don't really have a specific pro comp for him, but I think he's got some kind of Drew Brees-esque moments as a passer. I know Russell Wilson's been kind of a popular comparison for him, which I think he's got aspects of his game that are similar. I don't think he's as mobile as Russell is. I think people make the mistake of thinking Tua is kind of a very mobile guy, kind of a runner, but he's not. He's certainly mobile enough to make plays off script and to move around in the pocket as well as you need, but he's a pocket passer. He's not really a true dual threat guy, but he's a really solid player. If he was healthy, I think there'd be a legit choice that the Bengals have to make between Burrow and Tua. I would still take Burrow, but I think Tua's still a really good talent. Super accurate as a passer. Generally speaking, a pretty good processor. And I'd have him, you know, I'd have no problem taking him number one overall if he was healthy in a normal draft class. My third ranked guy is Justin Herbert out of Oregon. I think he's got some similarities play style wise. He's kind of like a mix of like a Carson Wentz and a Josh Allen. I say Josh Allen just because of how athletic Herbert is. We saw this year in Oregon's bowl game against Wisconsin, Herbert had 3 rushing touchdowns. He really showed off his skill set with his legs. And he suffered at Oregon from pretty incompetent. Well, when I say incompetent, the play calling and the coaching staff really limited him. They didn't use him to his full capacity. Because with a guy like Herbert, he has about every tool you could want in a quarterback. He's 6'6", He's got a massive arm. He's super mobile. And Oregon was having him throw 10 screens a game. It wasn't a complex offensive system. It wasn't letting him push the ball down the field. And I think if he's got a good chance to be more successful in the pros once he gets in an offensive system that'll let him succeed. I really like him. I think with him, you have a guy. I know there have been some questions floated about, like, you know, is he kind of this alpha leader? Which, even if he's not, I think you saw Oregon when you his first year there, they were 4-8. His last year there, they won the Rose Bowl. So I think I'd have no problem taking him in the top 10. He's definitely got some risk to him. He's not a slam dunk. He's not, or when I say slam dunk, he's not a sure thing like I'd say Burrow is, but he's got all the physical talent in the world, and I think if he's developed properly, he can and gets put in a situation to succeed, he can be a really successful NFL quarterback. My fourth guy is Jordan Love out of Utah State. Pro comparison wise, this is not a career projection, but from a play style perspective, he plays like Mahomes in terms of mobility to make plays off script, kind of as a thrower, he can deliver the ball from different arm angles. He's got a really quick release and kind of has these plays like you see Mahomes where he'll roll out in the pocket, throw off one foot and hit a guy 40 yards downfield. So he's got some moments of brilliance. The thing with him is he was a lot worse this season than he was last year. And there's definitely some reasons for that, but he's a tough evaluation because, you know, for every one of those great throws, you'll have two throws where it's like, you know, what were you seeing there? Why did you throw that? So he's a guy where I think completely dependent on situation and where he lands. Because if he lands in a good spot, he's got a shot to be the best quarterback to come out of this class. But he also has a shot to be, you know, a backup quarterback in 2 years. So I think he's kind of a risky player, but there's certainly a high ceiling. And my fifth guy is Jacob Eason out of Washington. Pro comp, I'd say he's kind of like a Matt Stafford light. I think he's got the best arm in this class. He can make some absurd tight window throws. But the main issue with him is all about consistency. Because people have a lot of questions about him as a processor in terms of how he's seeing the field, his decision making. And he has flashes of, you know, being a really solid processor. I'm just going back to the game against Oregon. Early in the game, they had a play where it was a Mills concept. So a Mills concept means your outside receiver runs a deep post route, and the slot receiver on the same side runs a dig route. So from the quarterback perspective there, what Eason has to do is read the safety. If the safety drops back and goes for the post route, then he throws a dig route that's going underneath it. If the safety comes up to get the dig route, then Eason's supposed to throw the post. So in that instance, Eason read the safety perfectly. The safety stepped up for the dig route. Eason hit the receiver on the post route for a 55-yard touchdown. And it was like a perfect throw, hit the guy right in stride. And when you see plays like that, it really gets you excited about him because it's like, man, if he could do this consistently, he'd be a top five pick. But he's not consistent, and that's the problem.
So
he's a little bit of a heartbeat. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I cover BYU I work at a local radio station here in Salt Lake, and I cover BYU, and that was the best throw of a college football season I've seen all year, was the throw he made against BYU.
Yeah, he threw it through like four defenders, and it's like that's what gives me the Stafford vibes. It's like he's got a cannon for an arm, and he can make these throws between four defenders where it's like, man, that's an insane throw. And like, there's like two people on earth who can make that throw. But then he'll also have plays where, you know, he'll be under pressure and he'll throw off his back foot into double coverage, and it's like, why would he do that? So I think with him, it's can he consistently play at his best? Can he consistently make those, you know, great throws and limit the bad decisions? Because if he can put it together consistently, he's got, you know, he can be a top five quarterback in the NFL. But he's certainly risky. I think kind of what you're seeing in this class is I think the top two guys are pretty safe. Tua's risky just because he's been hurt a ton. But if Tua's healthy, he's a pretty safe prospect. And the last three guys are kind of your, like, great physical traits, have flashes of brilliance, but can they put it together consistently? I think that that's kind of the questions for the last three in Herbert, Love, and Eason.
Right. So I want to go a little bit deeper into each of these guys. I'll start with Joe Burrow. He's widely expected to be the number one overall pick. I follow the combine kind of closely, and the one thing Daniel Jeremiah, obviously the best guy at this, said was that he kind of lacks arm strength. To me, that sounds like a red flag. He was still extremely high on Burrow's, but Burrow, pardon me. I always add an S for some reason. How big of a weakness is his, quote, lack of arm strength? Is that a thing, or is that overblown, and should the Bengals be concerned about that?
Yeah, so what I'd say is typically when you're evaluating a guy, you just want to, you want their arm to kind of meet the threshold where it's strong enough that it's not a severe detriment to their play. And he meets that. So I think his arm is more than good enough. And considering that he's basically elite at everything else, you know, I don't think it's a huge concern. Like, you know, he's not a guy who's, he's not going to be in homes and throw the ball 75 yards. He can't throw the ball 85 or like 75 or 80 yards downfield, but you don't really need to do that too often in games. I think the bigger question is going to be, you know, generating velocity to fit it into tight windows. And he did that in college. He was, he led the CFB in tight window throws this past year. So I think it's like, yeah, sure, it'd be better if he had a stronger arm, but I think he meets kind of the threshold of where you want a guy to be. So it's not a huge concern for me. I think the Bengals should still take him number one overall.
All right. Tua, I want to talk about him a little bit now. His health is obviously a concern. If he's healthy, what's his ceiling?
I think he's, you know, he can be an elite quarterback in the NFL because he's got pretty much everything you look for in a franchise QB. He's a, you know, great dude off the field, good leader, very accurate, good decision maker. He's mobile. He can make plays off script. The big thing is just health. Can he stay healthy? Because if he can stay healthy, I think he's going to be a star. But his injury history is super worrying because it's not just like, you know, one bad injury here and like he broke his bone or something, which, I mean, he's got a history of chronic lower body injuries, and that doesn't bode well for the future. Because he's basically, he's probably going to have arthritis in his hips based on the people I've talked to. He's even said himself he's never going to be the same. He dislocated his hip, if I'm correct. So that's a pretty big red flag. Apparently the medicals went well at the combine, which is good, and he's recovering well. But I think it's just worrisome that he's got kind of a history of chronic lower body injuries, because that's not going to bode well, particularly if he goes to a team that's picking high like Miami that doesn't have a very good offensive line. I think if Miami takes him, which, you know, it's looking like they a very decent chance they may, I wouldn't play him this first year. I'd make sure your offensive line's in a really solid spot before you put him out there, because the worst thing that can happen is you throw him out there like week five, injures his legs again, you know, breaks his leg or something like that, or tears his ACL. Then it's like, I think you just got to be careful with him. And it's his health is the biggest issue by far. I don't really have many questions about him as just a player.
So do you think it's worth the Dolphins taking him? Do you think it's worth trading up for him if these health concerns are that big of an issue? Or does it just not matter? If you have a shot to get your quarterback, you have to go get them.
I think it's tough to say without really knowing. Like, an NFL team would know this, but without really knowing his medical, like what his medicals look like, and kind of what the prognosis is for his hip injury. So if that's looking solid, it's certainly a risk, but I think I'd still take him pretty high, because if he's healthy, you've got a stud. But I think it's hard to say without – if his medicals are bad, I think it's hard to take him that high, particularly for a team like Miami that's entering a rebuild.
All right. So, Justin Herbert or Jordan Love, if I took those guys and I put them in the league and I said 4 years from now, who's more likely to be the better quarterback? Who would you say?
Yeah, so I think Herbert's the better prospect. But I think my answer to the question is this is completely dependent on landing spot. Because they're both, neither of them are sure things. Both of them are guys who have really good tools. They've got flashes of playing really, really well. But they also, more so, Love have, like, Love really didn't play well this year. So I will say if he's put in a situation to succeed and he's developed properly, I probably wouldn't play him immediately. He's got a shot to be an elite quarterback. He might be the best quarterback in his class in 4 years. But he also, you know, maybe a backup in a year or two. You don't know. So I'd say Herbert's the better prospect. If everything's in a vacuum, all things are equal, I'd take him over Love.
Okay. Where's the best situation for Jordan Love to end up? If you could hand pick a team to draft him, which team would that be?
That's interesting. I think the Saints would be a really interesting option. Because he can sit behind Drew Brees for a year. You got Sean Payton. You're playing in a dome. Like, and they've got some nice offensive weapons. I think that'd be a really great fit. The Colts as well would be a really solid fit. They've got a great offensive line. Frank Reich's a really good offensive coach. So I'd say those would be kind of my two places that I'd say.
Do the positives for Jordan Love outweigh the negatives? That's my question because, again, I live in Utah. I follow Utah State pretty closely. He was just awful this year. Like, not bad, like awful. He threw so many like head scratching killer picks throughout the year. Is he worth the risk to take in the first round? And how would you kind of, two questions, then if he is worth the risk to take in the first round, how would you explain the drop off in his senior season?
Yeah, so I definitely think I would say he's worth taking in the first round. I'd say the subpar season, it doesn't help. He lost 9 starters on offense, so pretty much his entire offense. He lost his head coach and his offensive coordinator. So it's going to be hard to maintain a high level of play when you're playing with, you know, people you've never played with before who probably aren't that great, and you're playing in a new system. So I think that definitely didn't help. Regardless of that, he did not play very well. He still... The main thing that bothered me is he had the habit of making the same mistake over and over. Like he threw multiple interceptions and pick sixes on curls and like short outbreaking like out routes, and it was the same mistake. He was just throwing them late, and he didn't really seem to be learning from that. And he had multiple interceptions where it's like, why the hell did you throw that? Like, what were you seeing there? And, you know, throwing it off platform into triple coverage, stuff like that, or not recognizing a linebacker in the middle of the field, things like that, which really kind of made you scratch your head. But when you go back to the tape from last year, 2018, he played very well, played much better. He's got the traits you look for in a guy, and he seems to have the right mindset about it. At the combine, he was talking about it, and he said, you know, if I didn't want to talk about the 17 interceptions I threw, I shouldn't have thrown them. You know, those are 17 moments where I can learn now. I can go back and look at the tape and learn from what I did there. And I think that's that's a great mindset to have about it and kind of proactively address it. So, yeah, I would take him in the first round. I think the Colts at 13 are a really solid spot for him. But a lot of it's going to depend on landing spot. I don't think you should play right away. And also, I mean, I don't have access to this information, but if you're an NFL team, talk to the guys who have been around him, talk to him, get a feel for the guy, because a large part of it's going to be, you know, how motivated is he to improve after a really bad season? And he seems to be in the right place mentally, but I think that's definitely something to consider.
Hearing you talk about Jordan Love, one guy pops into my mind, and tell me if I'm off base. Is this guy potentially Jameis Winston 2.0? A guy that has incredible arm talent but just turns the ball over too much?
I mean, I don't think it'll be to the level of Jameis. I don't think he's going to be a guy who's throwing 30 interceptions this season. I think he's always going to have plays, even as a pro, where you're like, you know, then why are you doing that? Like, you see that even with guys like, I mean, I'm a big Josh Allen fan, but even now, like, that game against Houston in the playoffs where, you know, he took off on a run and then tried to pitch it back to a tight end and they almost lost, they almost lost the game because of that. Or he'll have throws where, you know, it's like, what are you seeing there, Jordan or Josh or whatever? And but he'll also give you plays, like brilliant, brilliant plays that only a handful of guys can make. So it's just a balancing game. If he can consistently, more consistently play at a high level and limit the turnovers, you're going to have a very good quarterback. And he did that in 2018. I believe he threw 32 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. And then this year he threw 17 touchdowns and 17 interceptions. So I think I wouldn't say he's going to be Jameis 2.0 to make a long story short.
Okay. So now I have kind of a depth guy that I want to ask you about. So Jake Fromm, he's getting a lot of hype. I followed Georgia really closely this year because I thought they were going to be good. But they were, like, pretty bad on offense. Like, one of the worst offenses in the country, if I'm not mistaken. Why? I still see some people who say Jake Fromm's, like, a second-round quarterback. What is the fascination with this guy?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't really see it. He's, I think, my seventh-rated quarterback. I've got a fourth-round grade on him. There's some things you can bank on with him. He's a smart dude. He seems like a very good leader. The people who know him and have spent time with him seem to rave about him. Even, you know, Jim Nagy, who runs the Senior Bowl, which is, for those who don't know, it's a draft event, essentially like an all-star game for seniors. You know, Jake Fromm went there for interviews, and he watched tape with Jim Nagy, and Jim Nagy was like, wow, this guy's, you know, great leader, great to talk to, great once you get on the whiteboard, and, you know, he knows his stuff. So from an intangibles perspective, he seems to be very good. That being said, his tape is not very good. He's super limited physically, and he's not he doesn't do the little, like, when we talk about Joe Burrow doesn't have a great arm, but he does pretty much everything else at an elite level. Jake Fromm does not have a good arm, but he's not consistently accurate, which is a big problem if you don't have a great arm. And I think people rave about his mental game and his processing ability. I think that's a little bit overrated. I saw games where he'd have stretches, like the 2018 SEC Championship versus Alabama. First half, played very well, played at the borderline elite level. In the second half, he started to get really flustered, was staring down guys. And I don't think he's like a case where he's like, okay, he doesn't have a great arm, but he's perfect mentally and he's very accurate. I still think he's kind of a guy you bring in and is your backup for 10 years and can be a spot starter at times and maybe middle of the road starter, like a Kirk Cousins type guy or, you know, Case Keenum. But I would not, like, the people who say he's a top 50 talent, I really disagree.
All right. So I want to wrap up here. Every year there are these guys that slip into him. For example, last year, Gardner Minshew. Give me a guy that might be drafted third round. They don't really have a chance to start, but if they got thrown into the fire, you think they might do really well.
Yeah, so some guys I'd say on day two or day three, so Jacob Eason would be my guy on day two just because of the talent he has. Like, if he puts it together, you've got a star. But I don't think he should play right away. I don't think there's a ton of guys who should play immediately who you're going to take on day two and day three. Maybe Jake Fromm could do that just because he's, like, pretty solid processor. And,
let me clarify. They don't have to play. It could be a situation where they start as a backup and maybe halfway through the season may get called in.
Yeah, so I'd say the two other guys I'd mentioned outside of Eason. One is Anthony Gordon, who's like Gardner Minshew from Washington State. He reminds me of Jimmy G a little bit. he's mentally raw. He's got some fundamental things, like his footwork's pretty atrocious, but he's got a great release, very accurate. He can make plays off. He's a baseball guy, so he can. He does well, kind of changing his arm angles, making plays off script. So I feel comfortable taking him in the third round or so, because I think he could be a starter. One guy on day three, I'd say, is James Morgan out of FIU. He's like a firm day three grade for me. But if I had to bank on the quarterback, he'd be my kind of go-to developmental guy. He's got a good arm. Apparently a very good leader. And he's got some flashes of great ball placement. So those would be my main three.
All right. One last guy that didn't come up that I'm just curious what you think about. Jalen Hurts. What do you think about him? Obviously, Oklahoma quarterbacks have been usually drafted pretty highly, and they kind of pan out. I know Baker didn't have a great season last year, but he definitely showed flashes in his first year. I think Kyler Murray was great last year. Do you think Jalen Hurts has any chance at success in the NFL?
Yeah, so I'll start with saying I was very high. I really like Baker and Kyler. Both were top 10 players, respectively, in their respective draft classes. But I don't think Jalen's on the level of them as prospects. I don't think anyone does. I struggle with him just because he's got, you know, every intangible you want. He seems like a great leader. He's a mobile dude, you know, and that seems to be the way the NFL is trending. But, man, he is really limited as a passer. And I struggle, at least where he is right now, I struggle to see a guy who's going to be a starter just because it's like it's really rough when you watch his tape as a passer. You know, he's not a great processor. He can't really make tight window throws, doesn't generate a ton of velocity. Like, he's got a lot of work to do. I mean, look, if there's a guy you want to bank on who's going to improve, it's him because, man, his work ethic seems to be off the charts. He seems to be like a great leader. But how do I phrase this? He's like a guy I think you could take on day three. I've got a fourth round grade on him currently, but I think where he's at right now, I struggle to see a guy who's going to be a very good starter just because he's really limited as a passer. My pro comp for him is Tyrod Taylor. I think he can be that type of guy, but I don't see him ever being an elite quarterback.
All right. Well, Eli, thank you very much. This has been very helpful. I've learned a ton about kind of a quarterback class that is coming out. Of the guys that you described, I think that Joe Burrow is my cup of tea. I'm excited to see him in Cincinnati. The idea that offense might have Joe Mixon, A.J. Green, Joe Burrow, and Tyler Boyd is... Suddenly, the Bengals seem watchable week one. So, I'm excited to see how that pans out. Where can people find you on Twitter? Find some of your stuff.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at ET Scouting. So that's just the letter E, letter T, and then Scouting. I write some content for Blue Chip Scouting, run by another guy on Twitter called Dalton Miller. And I write some stuff occasionally for SC Blitz, which is the Steelers website. So yeah, thanks for having me on, man. It was great to come on and talk some quarterbacks.
Absolutely. We will have one show, I believe, out next week, and then we will be back with our free agent shows during free agency week. Thank you guys very much for listening. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at EndZonePod. Leave us a rate and review on iTunes. That would be much appreciated. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric18Utah if you want. And that'll do it. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will see you next time. Peace out. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.